Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. And today we welcome back a guest we've had on before, and he was the most popular, I think, maybe the most popular guest we had on the podcast so far, certainly having the most listens of a podcast in the space of time of all of our ones so far. So that's encouraging. So Charlie from SI, hello and welcome again.
Hello, chaps. Yeah, thank you for having me on, and I'm quite chuffed to hear there was such a hit last time.
Yeah, hopefully not a one-hit wonder.
I wonder if it had anything to do with having mentioned Greatland Gold in the last podcast.
Well, we mentioned a lot, didn't we? Maybe all those hashtags brought people in, but it was very good information. So so today we're going to focus on one company in particular, but let's just make sure Kenny is doing all right.
Yeah, I'm still here. I was just listening quietly in the background. Yeah, it's great to have you back on, Charlie. And we pretty much knew before the podcast went out that it was going to be well received, because you're extremely well knowledgeable in various geological subjects and across many continents. So yeah, it's great to have you back, and I'm over the moon that we're going to be talking about Power and Metal Resources, because it's probably the biggest holding in my portfolio. And I also last Saturday or Sunday, myself and Mark done a one-off special in Power and Metal Resources as well. So yeah, it'll be quite good to compare the two, and you can probably tell me I'm talking absolute rubbish in mine.
Kenny just did a brain dump of POW, but it was nice. It was good. You felt better for it, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to get off my chest. It was just that way when something builds up and you've got to see it. So I had to see it, so it's done. So hopefully you'll validate a lot of the stuff that I've said tonight.
Well, we'll see. Oh,
hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Power Metal Resources, Charlie, an SI client. Lots of projects in the portfolio, and I think their flagship one is what they call Hennetti. So maybe we could just talk a bit about that for to start with.
Yes, certainly. So Hennetti's in a pretty interesting part of Tanzania. So I think we should talk a little bit about Tanzania and where it's progressing. Mm-hmm. Because I'm starting to hear, like I said in the previous podcast, I used to live in Rwanda, and we used to hear a lot about what was going over in Tanzania when they had all of the problems with the ministry coming in. And the interesting new mining laws. That whole sentiment, all of the conversations, the talk that was coming out of Tanzania is starting to change. So I don't know at what point we'll start seeing a significant change in Tanzania, but it's certainly looking more and more exciting. So I'm really excited about Hennetti, mm-hmm. And the near-term future progression of it. I did get a chance to actually chat with the gentleman's name. Oh, no.
Christian Schapalewski.
Yes, thank you. Oh, he's very knowledgeable on the project. So it was one of his babies when he was inside Kibo. And he was talking me through it a little bit. And what's quite interesting about it is, so it's three geophysical targets within a ultramafic unit. Now, these ultramafic units are what these nickel, copper, and PGE elements are usually naturally concentrated within, but within certain geological circumstances, they can pool within the magma that's flowing through the crust and create these massive sulfide magmatic blobs of ore, which associated with the sulfides that form. Now, usually these things are actually rather hard to detect and find. And this is something that Kavango are looking at in Botswana. They've got a huge regional area there, which they're testing to try and find this. It's basically a new exploration play that they've got going over there. But they're in a lot earlier stage where the targets they're looking for are deep. They're within an unknown exploration belt. And they're a different sort of play to what Kavango had. The Hennetti project, which has got three geophysical anomalies, which indicate near surface. So we're talking about a target that could be as shallow as 30 meters, and also surface coincident geochemistry. So in particular, a form of nickel, which isn't a weathered concentrate nickel. So people have heard of nickel laterites and nickel sulfides. Now, a nickel laterite is where your igneous rock is weathered away over time, and all of the certain elements or certain minerals broken down and leave weathered away, washed away. And as a result, your nickel is concentrated into this kind of clay mush, which you see in Indonesia. So it's generally these areas which have got very tropical environments. And that's called a laterite. What we're looking for are nickel sulfides, and you can get concentrations of this at surface. So it's important to know when you get a anomalous nickel reading at surface, what form that is in. And in this case, it's actually forming in this form of semi-precious gemstone, which is very indicative of being proximal to this magmatic sulfide dumping event, which is really promising. So not only have you got this geophysical anomaly there, you've also got the geochemistry in the right form to give you a good idea that actually there's probably something going on there, and it's certainly worth following up on. So that's something that I find very exciting and very interesting to hear a lot more about.
And what is the market for nickel?
So, the price of nickel at the moment fluctuates strongly because nickel is strongly controlled by, over in Russia, scrap nickel it floods into the market. And you've also got a lot of this nickel laterite coming from Indonesia. But something that's worth noting is actually at the beginning of this year, Indonesia actually cut their exports of nickel ore. So the idea being that they were going to encourage nickel smelters to start being produced and made in Indonesia. So it's actually really cut the amount of, because of that time delay for nickel to get into the market, it's creating a hole within it. So that's something that's quite interesting. But again, what are the uses of nickel? Nickel is used predominantly in stainless steel production. But it's becoming more and more important in the electric vehicle story. And that requires, generally, you get a grade one and grade two nickel. The grade one nickel is, generally speaking, from the sulfides. So identifying sulfides near surface, that's a fantastic target for getting a premium nickel concentrate out for future battery metals sector.
And this ultramafic belt that you talk about, Charlie, I mean, it's a ridiculous size. It's like 80 kilometers within this this footprint that Hennetti covers. I mean, it's not as if it's just a small straight length. It's a ridiculous length.
No, it's a fantastic area to be looking at. And once you find and refine your targeting method, I'm sure they're going to continue making discoveries all the way along this along the belt. But something also to note about nickel sulfides is generally they're not near surface. So to find something that looks like it might be as shallow as 30 meters, maybe deeper, geophysical models and notoriously tricky. There'll be something there, just what it is. You only find out once you've drilled it. But a lot of these nickel projects around the world are deep. If you look at those nickel copper PG projects, they are deep. And once you start going underground mining, you create a mine plan and you mine your mine plan. So when demand fluctuates, miners, especially in underground, also you could say, of course, with open pit operations, but very much so for underground operations, you can't suddenly speed up production. You're going to mine at a speed and you mine your plan. Mm-hmm. And so to have something at surface, it could be pretty interesting because they've got more options, I guess, near surface, open pittable. That sort of thing.
Yeah, what I also like about Hanetti as well, Charlie, is I don't know if you've sort of researched this, is there's a greenstone belt called, I think it's Lindone, which is up in the sort of northwest corner of the license. And I think it's Shanta Gold, which is, I think it's listed in the name anyway. It might be Shanta Mining now. I can't remember if they've changed their name, but they've got a couple of million ounce resource. And that greenstone belt extends right into the Hanetti footprint. So it's not just, you know, nickel PGMs. They've also got gold.
Yeah, no, yeah. There is artisanal mining in the area. I think it's over on the, might be the west of their license, where they do have artisanals working on there to extract gold. And so that's another fantastic follow-up that's there. And they've also got lithium anomalies in soil sampling. Like, Tanzania as a jurisdiction, put aside that they've had some recent troubles with their mining law, it's fantastic for miners. It was the third largest producer of gold, fourth largest producer of gold in Africa. Its heart and soul is mining. Many of the geotechs we used, again, over in Rwanda, were Tanzanian, because you know that they're reliable and they're very skilled mining technicians. And so that it just shows what a pedigree Tanzania is, and such a shame that the government did come in and mess it all up. But saying that, we have to remember it's actually this year. It's a it's election year in Tanzania, so we could be seeing, as we come around to, I think it's October, November, things start to change, certainly with the mining codes relaxing on some of their quite strict royalties and free carries on the assets. That could start to be lifted. We've seen some moves from some of the majors as well in the country, helping the project, the country, to be more attractive place of return.
I think Barrick Gold, I can't remember the name of the project, but I think Barrick Gold are back in town. So they are in Tanzania. So Hanetti is really interesting. So Pau's got their 25% joint venture stake, but more interestingly, they've got this option to increase to 35%, but that was recently extended. And some of the commentary coming from Katoro was that, you know, tier one majors were looking at the possibility of, I'm assuming an earning in a joint venture. So, yeah, there's an exciting few months coming up for the Hanetti project.
Oh, definitely. Certainly. If there's some drill holes go in and they come up with some, it doesn't even need to be high-grade nickel. You just need some indicators in there. Mm-hmm. And I reckon we'll start seeing some interest again from potentially majors, potentially people buying in, because it is an attractive jurisdiction. It will be an attractive jurisdiction to get back in, just because of the geology of Tanzania.
Yeah. Perfect. All right, all that rounds off Hanetti. Nice. Where would we like to go next? What's next in your hit list for Pau? We've obviously got Australia, we've got the DRC, we've got Botswana.
Well, should we talk about to Victoria Goldfields? That one I've recently produced a little broker research note on. Broker note on. Which that one we're focusing on. So Power Metals have got their 49% interest in with a 51% interest from Red Rock Resources in a company called Red Rock Australasia. And now they've picked up a huge amount of land within the Victoria Goldfields. And that's an exciting area for people to be, because I think everyone, I'm sure, has been noticed on TSX listed Fosterville South that listed earlier this year. And they picked up just some fantastic ground. I think they raised 15 million Canadian dollars, and they're now already out on the ground drilling on one of their sites, and they're looking about getting a third drill rig on a second site. And their market cap went up phenomenally. And I think we were checking just before the podcast, it was the market cap sits at around 120 million Canadian dollars, which for an exploration project is absolutely phenomenal. Being that they haven't really done much except for pick up high quality ground on strike to a particular project called Fosterville, run by a company called Kirkland Lake, again, another Canadian company.
Do you know, I didn't know that. I didn't realise that was the case, that they were still explorers.
Well, the explorers, Fosterville South?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've not got a single ounce of chalk, Mark.
I didn't know that, because that's... Yeah. I didn't know that. That's good.
No, they've got some big backers behind them, and I think that's given the given investors the confidence to go behind them. Because so the interesting thing about Victoria is there's a change in the exploration model, because it's always been seen as this kind of really difficult metallurgical jurisdiction to be in, because the old timers, they were going after more of this mesothermal gold, free gold, that pretty much got hoovered up in the area. And now you're left with these ore bodies, which are very gold within sulfides or refractory gold. And that's really difficult to process. And it hasn't been till I think it was about the 90s that actually even later than the 90s, early 2000s, that you're able to actually process some of this refractory ore. And so even though Fosterville Mine was mining at, I think they had head grades of just over 4 grams per ton, which is fantastic grades, and they're going underground for it. The cost to process that ore actually really broke them down to an equivalent. That's putting into kind of give people an idea, is like something like 1 gram per ton. That's where your equivalent of a free gold asset. I'm just as a kind of example of how expensive it can be to process some of this refractory gold. Anyway, they got down to about 800 meters within the within Fosterville's mine. They were doing some continued exploration drilling. And whilst they've been going down through the mine, they had been finding these zones of free gold, but they were never consistent, continuous areas until from when they were at this about 800 meters, they drilled down and hit this zone called the Phoenix Zone. And that's where they suddenly found this mix of the sulfides, which they'd been previously mining. And suddenly they hit this free gold stuff. And this came back at some ridiculous grades. We were talking about thousands of grams per ton, where we suddenly, when you say thousands of grams, you should be talking about ounces per ton over continuous meters. And that completely changed the story for all the area, because now you've suddenly got this model change in exploration geologists' head to, okay, this can only be high cost producers can only be produced here. Actually, suddenly Fosterville became one of the highest grade projects, and I think it is the highest grade project in the world, with one of the lowest costs of extraction. So suddenly that kicked off everything. I think that was in 2016 that they came out with this, Kirkland Lake came out with a new resource on the project, and that's just spurred it away. And Fosterville South just picked up the land south of them on strike to these north-south faults. So you've got these main Listric faults, and off those you've got these still major, major faults coming off a large Listric fault, and those are where we're finding the mineralization. And where you're finding these sulfide ore bodies at surface, which were also become oxidized, and get these oxide heap leach projects as well occurring up in Victoria. Now, those have suddenly become really hot targets once again to do simple geophysics over it, and simple geochemistry, just to go over it with modern day processes, but with this new exploration model in your head to basically crack these new new areas. And that's an exciting thing to start looking at. And that's what I think Fosterville South really picked up on, and Power Metals within their Red Rock Australasia joint venture are also going to be looking at. But of course, they're a lot earlier than Fosterville South. So just to put people into perspective, because what Power Metals market cap of 2 million UK pounds, why isn't it at that equivalent of 70, 80 million market cap that Fosterville South is? And I think that comes down to project ranking. They've only just picked up these licenses. There's a huge amount of data to go through on these areas and to actually work out what's hot and what's not. You're going to find certain areas are going to have fantastic looking footprints. Some areas are going to have shallow drill holes, historic mining. There's going to be a huge amount of data to go through. So what Red Rock Australasia could be doing right now is just, okay, these are the licenses we've got. This is the information we can compile from the archives. Layer that up, and from that, we'll then start seeing soil sampling campaigns being planned, basic geophysics surveys going on. And from that, we'll be then looking at, hopefully some drilling.
It's just a start, isn't it?
It is. And it's a fantastic start to be in, because it's the opening of a new, it's so rare for an old, well-known a mining jurisdiction have a new model, new exploration model kind of put into. And that's given the guys at Power a real opportunity to jump on something. And look forward to hearing more about what they're going to be doing.
That is what is really fascinating. Like you say, this old mining jurisdiction has a sudden, you know, new lease of life kind of thing. It's certainly, I said it before numerous times, the hot place to be right now. And as Kenny said, you know, there's a lot of land grabbing going on. I very much look forward to seeing the story develop and see what comes out of it, really.
Yeah, I think you hit a key point there, Mark, as well, the land grabs. I mean, it's not just Red Rock Australasia that's been doing the land grabbing. Although, to be fair, I think they were pretty quick off the mark, and they were extremely aggressive. There's very little land left around even Ballarat or Fosterville or even Costerfield, which is sort of further east. And anything that does get dropped by some of these companies, because in Victoria, after a certain amount of years, I think it's, let's say it's 3 years, I can't remember exactly, you need to drop 20% of your licensed footprint. And any time that a company drops their 20%, you know, part of their footprint, there's like three and four companies that are applying for that land in the same day. So you've got three or four companies all on the ballot for a bit of land that's been dropped.
Why does it have to be dropped?
That's just part of the process over there. So I think it may be year four, Mark. I don't quote me on it, but after 4 years of holding a granted license, you need to give up 20% of your footprint. Oh. So most companies give away their 20% that they don't
like so much. Yeah,
but the fact that this unattractive part of your expiration license is getting snapped up before companies, and they get into—I don't know what the ballot situation is like in Victoria, but.
And that's every 4 years, is it, that happens, regardless?
I think it's a different percentage.
I won't
bore
you.
I honestly can't remember either, but it just shows you the level of activity in the area. I think there's plenty of articles out there. I think in February, March, or was it March and April? I think they had more applications in March and April this year than they did in the whole of last year. And that was during COVID as well. So it's a really good story. And the good thing for me is that POW can just, or the joint venture can just sit back, do their desktop reviews, and watch what happens around about them. Because there's going to be so much, not mergers, but there's going to. I mean, in Fosterville South, I've now got this massive. War chest, because their placings have been oversubscribed, so I'm sure they won't be hanging about. They'll be picking up anything they can at a reasonable price, and I think Mawson Resources are in the mix as well. That's another. I think they're TSX as well, I think. So there's plenty of players in there, and Eric Sprott's throwing his money about as well, and anytime he's throwing money about, people will follow. So it's. I don't think the market's picked up in the fact that POW's probably got the third or fourth, the joint venture has probably got the third or fourth biggest footprint in Victoria.
Right. That's significant, isn't it?
I think they need to do the project ranking, understand what they've got before necessarily publicising too much, because land holdings can be a fickle beast because... Well, I guess if you're going to be a real skeptic, you could pick up a bit of land anywhere. It's what are you going to do with that land, and what's your theory behind it that really leads the story for why you should be getting into these projects. And having just a basic look of, I haven't been fortunate enough to go through the actual individual projects with the Power Metals guys or the Red Rock Resource guys on an individual basis. But looking at what they've got, they have targeted areas which have got known historic activities, including, like I said, drilling, and they've got the mining activities. And when we're looking for known mineralized systems, like Fosterville was, all it was one of these sulfide systems at surface that becomes oxidized. It was initially as an open pit. Oxide play. Well, if Fosterville's got one of those and Power Metals has one of those, then you should be thinking in your head, okay, well, the same story could follow up here. Mm-hmm. What happened over there could happen over here. Mm-hmm. And though we're talking about holes that might have to go down to plus 800 meters to prove these high grade zones. It certainly is a good indication that you're on the right structural model for it. And especially if you're on strike to projects like Fosterville, then I think having known mineralizing systems de-risks your exploration hugely.
And how far away did you say Fosterville is from the JV?
I actually don't know.
Maybe you didn't say.
It's on the strike. No, they're down to the south. So Fosterville South have got the land directly down from the Fosterville mine. And then over to the east and west of that, so kind of a parallel. So like I was saying, there's a major fault, a major ballistic fault, and then these smaller but still major faults off that, which mineralization seems to be associated with. And on those ones that are coming off, those are where power have got their licenses.
Okay.
And yeah, so they're just off from where the Fosterville mine is. But still, known mineralizing systems is the place to go looking and applying models. And they haven't, just to add on to the whole Foster, Victoria's not just being at the moment explored for where the known mineralizing systems are. They're also looking to the north, where they've got this Murray Basin sediments that are overlying the area. And there has been, there were two projects, it was Four Eagles and I can't pronounce the other prospect, but they were discovered with AC, Air Corps, pumping multiple holes through this sedimentary basin to identify these geochemical signatures below the this sedimentary cover. And we can only assume that the geology continues below north and below that cover. Now, it would be good for investors to understand that actually that sort of exploration is a different sort of model to what's happening below the so south of the Murray Basin sediments, because when you don't have that sedimentary cover, a lot more of it's been picked over, and it was picked over by the old timers, certainly, since, what was it, 1850s. But your technical risk is being dropped because you've got these known targets. But whereas in the north, below these sediments, you're not going to have any historic data to help you start targeting, and it's going to cost you a lot more to find these projects. So you're more likely to, when the drilling comes out, we're going to be seeing, I'm sure, some very good drill results from Power Metals. It will be a case of they will be looking for maybe, don't know how to quite put this, but it is de-risked. They're not looking for the monsters that you might be finding up in the north, because that land hasn't been searched at all over there. But this southern area, you're actually going to be, as a junior explorer with not that bigger budget as a major would have, that's the place to be looking. And it is a great place where you've got to really fight for your land, which Metals have, or Red Rock Australasia have done. They've fought, they've got that land, they've secured it. Now that's most of the hard work and kind of risk reduction for them, I guess, at this stage done. They've got the land. Now it's a case of finding what's the best target to spend the cash on.
That's quite a good sentence to finish on, though, isn't it? That you say there's a junior, it's the best place. It's not de-risked, but it's more perhaps de-risked than something else.
It's a suitable place for juniors to be hunting.
Yeah.
They're not going off into, let's call it elephant country, and they don't have enough ammo for it. That might be what I'd say.
Cool. Okay.
Perfect. Okay. Right, so we've covered Australia, we've covered Hinetti. Do you know much about the Botswana assets, Charlie? Obviously, the Ditto one we'll just leave out because that's still under due diligence. Do you know much about Malopo Farms?
Malopo Farms, I know a little bit about, though I can't go into, I just don't know enough about it. I know it's a very attractive area. I know these geologists behind it are very competent, which is, to be perfectly honest, with these sorts of exploration projects. So this one, once again, it's they're looking for these magmatic ore bodies, very much like Manetti. And the key thing behind these ones is you need a technical, experienced management team on the ground. And that's what the guys at Malopo Farm have. They've pulled together a very experienced team. So though I can't say anything particularly on the asset, I think I'll be quite confident in saying that they've got the right team for the job.
Yeah. I mean, they've been very slow. It's Callahan Key is the name of the private company behind local farms. And they've been very slow and deliberate. They've not rushed into any potential drilling. They've narrowed down their targets. I think they'd 18 or 20 to begin with, and they've whittled that down, I think, now to, I think it's four sort of superconductors, I think there's the terminology they used. So, yeah, I mean, I'm assuming my local farms, I mean, I think the environmental management plan was in with the mines department when COVID kicked off. So,
yeah,
I think when COVID lifts and the plan gets it stuck in the box, they've got to be drilling, you would think, within the next couple of months.
Oh, certainly. I'm certainly going to be watching them. They're one that I need to really knuckle down and get my head around, understand what they're going to be doing. But like many of these projects, it'll come down to really the experience of the management team and eventually actually putting some holes in the ground. And with these systems, until you've put holes in the ground, you can't refine those geophysical anomalies. And so that'll be a key point for investors, is not necessarily, I always like to be a bit conservative about this and just say, look, don't worry if they don't hit mineralization on the first go. What you've now got is a piece of core which will be able to tell the geologist specific geophysical characteristics, which then next time vectors into your next next holes in the future as you're building away this new development of a model. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was something, again, people were worried about with Kavango, and I don't think people should have been worried about Kavango's holes. They're understanding the geology more. And though you can say, well, there's my money gone, actually, your money hasn't gone. It's developed a new process for progressing forwards, and that's what we're in the game for. It's high risk, high return.
It's treasure hunting, isn't it, almost?
It totally is, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to... as and when exploration or drilling and what have you gets back happening with Power Metals, or indeed with any company that on SI's books that you're familiar with, that we can actually maybe we can even look at a drill, core, and you can tell us how excited you are about it and what story it tells. It might be quite a nice thing to do, you know?
I certainly would love to do that. Mm. If ever I get out on site to a couple of these projects, I'll make sure I record and take some photos of some of the core. Well, the stuff that, of course, is out in the public domain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I could go through exactly what has made the geologist so excited, because I think people don't always realize that alteration features in drill core can be just as exciting as hitting the real thing for a geologist. Though, of course, it's a bit better for everyone's bank accounts if you do struck gold. but if you're drilling away and you suddenly see core coming out with these huge alteration halos, you suddenly wait, you kind of, it's a bit like, I don't want to say like battleships, but just imagine that, I don't know how you can compare it with battleships, because you've got this indication halo around a system. I need a better analogy, really, for
we get what you're talking about, but so obviously Botswana, they've got loads of projects. I mean, Cameroon, it's cobalt and possibly nickel, but I think that's kind of in the back burner just now for POW, so I don't really see a lot of focus, so we won't spend any time on it. Kasinka's quite interesting. I don't know if you've looked at the DRC project that they've got. It appears to be a sort of 7 kilometer anomaly, which they got from this termite sampling program.
Yes, I haven't looked into that in too much detail, but Certainly, DRC, another really exciting jurisdiction, but of course, high risk, high return sort of projects. Termite sampling is fantastic. whoever came up with that is absolute genius.
Termite mound sampling takes quite a lot of stick, doesn't it? You see a lot of people that take the mick out of it. So go on, tell us why it's so exciting.
Well, the whole point is that your termites, termites are a little bit like icebergs. Now you've got a little bit poking out the top, mm-hmm. and then you've got this kind of huge body underneath the soil. And actually what you're doing there is, especially when you've got cover and everything, is these termites are going down, picking up material, bringing up to the surface to build that top cone. Yeah. And of course, the deeper they go, they need to bring this material to the surface and they build the their termite mound. So it's almost an inverse of the ground, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And so by sampling that, you can really work out what is going on underneath the ground, and especially when it can be rock solid material underneath them. Mm-hmm. It is quite exciting. I've heard the same thing being done for diamonds, it's interesting. It's exciting because it's a new technique, and new techniques are what are going to find the next projects. And when someone says something's a bit crazy, then maybe it is a good thing to be doing. We were talking about mining at the bottom of the oceans.
And I mean, presumably it comes with very little cost, doesn't it? So, you know, it's all very well to sort of to laugh about it or something like that. But if it saves in the company money and investors money in some, you know, early stage exploration, then surely it's a good thing.
I certainly wouldn't give it the same height of security in your sampling as a drill rig. I would say it's more like an effective way of soil sampling.
I
would say, or maybe, you got your soil sampling at depth, and it saves you digging holes. Digging holes takes time, takes manpower, takes logistics, especially if you're in a difficult area. That would be what I would I'd point out, is it can be very quick to just go along and chop into a termite mound.
You might find this bizarre, Mark, but there's been cases, and I think it's in South Australia, they've actually sampled, is it eucalyptus leaves for gold?
Really?
Yeah, because the trees suck up water and stuff from, you know, way down deep, and they can build up a footprint of the sampling from the leaves. So it's just, I mean, it's minute amounts, but it still gives them almost like a freebie map of potential targets. So
you've got to take it into perspective of what you're trying to get out of your campaign. So if you're trying to cover a huge area, that's why people do, for example, you start off in a new jurisdiction, a new district, you start off with your stream sediment sampling, because the streams are drawing down material from that hillside to one spot where you can sample, and that can represent somewhat of that stuff over there, and it's quick and it's effective. If you were to soil sample some of these quite extensive areas, when people are doing a kind of real first pass greenfield exploration, you would be there for years, and it's going to cost you a huge amount of money to actually sample all that material. So it's working out a method which is both time and cost effective for the results that you're looking for. And if you're looking for a big gold mine, you should, let's take stream sediment sampling, you should be able to pick it up, because three streams coming off a ridge are going to be hitting gold, and you should kind of work out, okay, well, there's something up there. Now you move in and you can do some form of soil sampling, or in this case, termite sampling, and that quickly kind of zones you into particular areas as quickly and effectively as possible. So Yeah.
Yep. Perfect. All right. Just we're almost finished, Charlie. We won't keep you much longer. So obviously, Powell have also got a project, Alamo Gold project. But again, that's under due diligence, so we won't spend too much time on that. But it does look quite interesting in Arizona. So it's hopefully, I think it's coming to the end of the due diligence period, so hopefully we'll get some more information. But I'd like to finish off on, obviously, it's part of the Hennetti deal. Pau picked up shares and warrants in Katoro Gold. And Katoro Gold, as well as obviously having one of their flagship assets, Hennetti, they've also got this Blyvoor tailings project in South Africa, which really, you know, looks really, really interesting. And the fact that in a recent RNS that the company has received 14 expressions of interest for financing the project. I mean, I wonder if you can explain, I roughly know what a tailings project is, but I think it'd be good just to explain to our listeners, you know, how a tailings project comes about.
Certainly. So this is a pretty interesting project that Katoro Gold came across, and it's not something you come across every day. So it's located in South Africa. It's made up of a number of tailings. It's not one single one. I think it's six or seven in total. Yeah. And tailings, as you know, process material from a from another mine, and the other mine I believe is actually still active. I think it's the Blyvoor mine actually.
Yeah.
So these tailings, originally the material that was processed at the mine was not processed up to modern day extraction technique standards, and these tailings we can still get between 50% and 60% recoveries out of them, which is actually pretty great when you think that the majority of the cost of mining a project is digging it up and crushing it. And so you've got this crushed material, which is relatively fine, which is free digging. You don't need to blast. You don't need to go underground, and you don't need to do any crushing. It's already there. It's this loose, sandy material. Okay, there might be some clays in there, but that can be dug up quite simply and put through a processing plant. Now, what's even more interesting here is Katoro aren't talking about using excavators, which are another cost, and you'll also have to have humans inside your excavators. They can actually use kind of a water system, kind of high-pressured sprinklers on these tailings, which loosens up the material, allows it to flow down, and they can pump it to the processing plant, which again cuts down those costs, which is so crucial to making tailings processing projects. So valuable is that they can be up and running at very low operating costs. And the current scoping study that was done by Katoro Gold, they've used slightly more conservative numbers, speaking specifically within in the actual project. They've been a little bit more conservative on how much it's going to cost to extract that material. So I'm going to be following them quite closely on how they actually progress this forward, because another problem you've got with tailings projects is they don't have that same geological continuity as you would with a gold vein. So it's very difficult to get that resource up to the measured category. So you have to do a lot of drilling there. And Katoro were fortunate enough that there was a lot of historic drilling done across the license there. So that's de-risked it quite significantly. And that's why they've been able to, during the this pandemic, in lockdown, been able to progress so far, as they've got all this historic data, metallurgical work and the likes done, that they can crack on with a scoping study. And that's why they put it as a bit of a conservative effort, a conservative number in there. And there's still areas where they can improve, especially with the metallurgy. They were They were talking about increasing up towards the 60% recovery area. We'll see whether or not that can happen or it can't. There can be some restrictions on processing. The metallurgical wizards, I'm sure, will be working their way on that. But we'll see how it goes.
It's quite a meaty resource. I mean, I think it's all in. I think it's about 1.34 million ounces of gold. And I think it's one particular tailings dump that has, I think it's in the measured category, and it's got a 25-year life of mine, just in that one tailings dump alone. So, yeah, I mean, I honestly think this is my personal opinion, you know, if the financing, they've got 14 expressions of interest, let's hope, you know, they get one that suits all parties, and if they get the financing, it's game on for the Equatorial. Definitely, and Blyver, and obviously, you know, Powers have got their shares and warrants, and not for, obviously Kibo as well. Kibo's got a huge chunk of shares and warrants, and Katoro as well. So, yeah, it could be really interesting going forward if that finance gets a tick in the box. It's fireworks, in my opinion.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, there we go. I'm trying to think. I think we've covered everything, Mark, Charlie. I don't think there's any project we haven't discussed. You think of anything I've missed?
No.
No,
I think we've covered most of Power Metals' portfolio there.
Yeah, perfect. Right. And as just an SI question, I suppose, as well, Charlie. Is there any plans to release an overall broker note? I know you guys done a sort of Victoria one last week. Is there any plans in place to do a note for the full portfolio, or has it not been dumped in your desk yet? Is that
I haven't had that dumped on my desk yet. No, I've had a couple of other projects that we have got bubbling away under the surface at the moment, which hopefully those who are signed up to SI will be hearing about shortly. But no, apart from that, I will be certainly watching Power Metals more closely, certainly with their rare earth project over in Botswana, the Ditau project. I'm quite interested in that. Rare earths are becoming more and more interesting, more and more exciting. And there are certain characteristics that I'm going to be watching and looking for to really have an indication as to where that license will be going. Certain projects have got certain characteristics and how they're processed. And for listeners who are interested in the rare earth industry, you've got examples to look at, such as Rainbow Rare Earths in Burundi, over in East Africa. And we've also got Pensana Rare Earths over in Angola. So pretty interesting jurisdictions to be having projects, but certainly an area that I'm really excited about, really, really excited about. Maybe it's because I'm young and like my green future, but no, that's what I'm interested in rare earths, I guess.
Yeah, I think the Ditto prospect, is it carbonatites? Is that the... Is that the key? Carbonatites, that's it. Yeah, I couldn't quite get the name out. I think that's the key for this project, isn't it?
Yes, no, the carbonatites. So there's a number of different rare earths that will be hosted within a carbonatite, and those will be then hosted within particular metallurgical characteristics. Mm-hmm. And those characteristics are very interesting. And is what, so during the 2005, there was a rare earth boom that some investors may have jumped in and got burnt on because the wrong location, wrong jurisdiction, they can have their problems. They're a specialist metal and should be treated as such. They're not copper and gold, where you can just look at the grades and run on that. You need to dig a little deeper, understand who's going to be buying this material. FYI, well, it's China, unless things change over in the US and Europe. But those are the things that investors should be researching on.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. Well, I think it's almost been an hour. I've been talking for, time seems to fly. So no, I appreciate your time tonight, Charlie, because I know you've been traveling about all day. And it's good to follow up the podcast we had last week in POW. And obviously now we've got a competent person talking about it instead of me just rambling on as I did last Sunday. But there might be a few pearls of wisdom in last Sunday's podcast. But hopefully this podcast will get the same treatment that your first podcast got, which was very well received. Mark, have you got anything to add?
No, except to say thank you very much, Charlie, again, for your time. Very, very, you know, we appreciate that a lot. It's very valuable.
Oh, thank you very much, gents.
Right. Perfect.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you for coming on again and talking to us.
Okay, thanks, Charlie.
Well, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, chaps.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.